Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to Malaga, where you find myself and Matt Roberts in the hotel bar. Those ambient sounds you hear are the sounds at 10 past 11pm of people arriving to start their night out. I've been in this hotel bar for about 6 hours and had the whole place to myself. But of course, everything starts very, very late in Spain, so things are just kicking off. Matt is here. We are both here to try and digest a quite extraordinary day in the tennis world, in the tennis year. I can't quite believe that we've just seen a day when Novak Djokovic lost from 3 consecutive match points up, and a day when Novak Djokovic lost 2 tennis matches. I'm still very, very shook by this, and I didn't even watch it all live, Matt. I can only imagine how you feel.
Yeah, you're right. It truly has been an extraordinary day. I was thinking halfway through it that, you know, I'll have travelled to, you know, a fair number of tennis events this year, and Novak Djokovic just always seems to end up the winner of them. You know, it's so rare that we go to events and Novak Djokovic in some capacity isn't a winner. I was thinking, you know, Indian Wells, he didn't win, but he wasn't allowed in the country then. And I went to the Billie Jean King Cup the other week, and obviously he didn't win that. But pretty much, besides from that, he tends to be the champion at the end of these things. And yeah, for Jannik Sinner to do what he did today, absolutely remarkable. One of the all-time feats, actually, I think, to take down Djokovic twice in the same day. And I know that the singles is much bigger in that respect than the doubles. And I'm sure we'll come on to talk about Djokovic in doubles. But it was Novak Djokovic on the court twice, and his will was on that court twice, and that had to be beaten both times. And Sinner and Italy and Sonego did it. It was remarkable.
Yeah, and it's actually very, very magnanimous of David not to be with us tonight, isn't it? I mean, obviously he's well, I hope he's fast asleep. He's probably not. He's probably waiting for the podcast to be uploaded so he can listen to it. But David was the one that called this, both, I think, in last night's podcast, sort of tentatively, but also less tentatively on our WhatsApp group today. David was calling it about the doubles, wasn't he? We both felt, and I think I felt it the most strongly, that no matter what logic you applied, and I agreed with all of the logic about Novak Djokovic in doubles, I didn't contest any of the arguments. I just thought Novak Djokovic's will bends things. It bends logic, mm-hmm. and it bends all the laws of science and tennis that you know to be true. And I thought, I still do think that Novak Djokovic's will is the most powerful thing in tennis. But I suppose being only one quarter of the court maybe does dilute it somewhat. But I just thought his will would overpower everything else today. But I didn't account for one Jannik Sinner. Or maybe I did, but the Jannik Sinner I was accounting for wasn't the Jannik Sinner that I now know him to be, because what a growth journey that man has been on in the last 2 weeks. I really think of him as a different guy to who I thought he was 2 weeks ago. Mm. 2 weeks ago, he was a talented guy. Now he's an animal.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
With his own will.
Yeah, what's his logo? Something to do with a fox?
Don't ruin it with the logo.
Is he logo worthy yet?
He still hasn't won anything.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, he could beat Djokovic 3 times in 11 or 12 days and walk away with 0 trophies. That would be incredibly cruel, wouldn't it? I think the more I've been thinking about this, I think the way Jannik Sinner won that singles was the reason why Djokovic was pretty flat in the doubles, certainly for a set and a half until he did sort of fire himself up. But, and of course, what I'm referring to there is what you said earlier with Sinner saving 3 consecutive match points at 4-5 in the third set. Djokovic has never lost a match where he's had consecutive match points like that. You know, it's only the fourth time ever that he's lost from match point up, and only the second time since he really became Novak Djokovic. You know, a couple of those were right at the start of his career. Marin Cilic did it in the Queens final, but that was on Cilic's serve on grass. It was 1 match point. You know, it was sort of over in a flash. This was 3 match points in a row. And there was a look in Djokovic's eyes that he knew he'd got it. You know, he'd been applying this pressure all throughout that third set. Sinner had been clinging on so impressively. Came through a 13-minute game at the start of the set. Saved a couple more break points through the set. But all the while you're thinking, either this pressure is going to tell and Djokovic is going to break, or Sinner's going to keep clinging on and it's just going to go to a tie break, and
we know what happens.
I mean, I know Sinner beat Djokovic in a deciding set tie break the other week, but this was a match Djokovic was desperate to win. You know, this wasn't round robin. So he's love 40 down Sinner. Djokovic sort of, I think he just thinks, I've got him here. And
I thought that
everyone thought that. Everyone in the whole stadium, in the whole arena, thought this is done. Serbia in the final. There's just no way Djokovic is losing from this position. He missed a slice on the first one of those match points, did Djokovic. And then from that point on, Sinner was immense. Served him off the court on the next point, hit a brilliant volley to save the third match point, served through the game. And I think Djokovic was shell-shocked. Because he then played a terrible game at 5-all. And it's just so interesting to see someone not collapse mentally against Djokovic through the set. To put Djokovic in the chance where, let's see if he gets tight. And that's what happened. And fair play, Jannik Sinner. I don't think there's anyone else at the moment who could have done that to Novak Djokovic today. He caused Djokovic to doubt and caused him to get a bit tight, and it was just incredible to see. And I think we then saw a bit of a hangover in the doubles, because Djokovic isn't used to losing like that, and I feel like Djokovic just wants to be on his own after a loss like that and process it and sort of rediscover his equilibrium and his balance. And suddenly he's been sent out to play doubles, which is a format we know he's not comfortable with, to try and win the tie. And he's facing Jannik Sinner again, who is just absolutely creaming the ball at this point. And it was too far, even for the great Novak Djokovic. Unbelievable from Jannik Sinner.
In hindsight, it still might not have been enough, but in hindsight, it probably hurt Serbia that they didn't go to the doubles against GB.
I think so.
Because Sonego and Sinner, they were impressive 2 days ago, but they suddenly look like a team today. I thought they didn't look like, wow, two singles players that are somehow weirdly cobbling it together. They really looked like a team today, I thought. And all of the traditional doublesy points were the ones that they were winning. And it wasn't a beatdown, but the points that Kecmanovic and Djokovic were managing to win in the doubles were the very unorthodox sort of how do we pull that off? That didn't look like a doubles point type thing. And maybe it would have been helpful for them to have had a run out a couple of days ago, but it still might not have been enough. Sonego and Sinner were a force today, and Kecmanovic and Djokovic were bad vibes. Mm. Pretty bad vibes.
Yeah. It confirmed why I wanted to see Djokovic in that deciding doubles, because it was just so interesting. Here you have, you know, the best male singles player of all time, who everything he does on a tennis court is in the best way possible selfish. You know, it's all about getting the best out of him, and suddenly he's paired with someone else. How does that work? And the truth is, it doesn't work. We've seen it enough times now to know that it doesn't work. I think there's a tennis level that Djokovic isn't great at doubles. You know, I think he needs to go to his local Tuesday evening club night and learn some general patterns and movements.
The positioning doesn't look right, does it?
And I don't think it was right from Kecmanovic either.
No, but yeah, exactly. Part of that might be second guessing, not trusting.
Yeah.
What your partner's doing, like
so often he's playing doubles with another singles player because it's a big tie for Serbia or whatever. If he had a great doubles player alongside him, it might work a little bit better, maybe. But so there's that element to it, the whole sort of tennis not maybe understanding the sort of geometry, I suppose, of the doubles court. But then there's the vibes, and I just think it looks really hard to play doubles with Novak Djokovic.
It looks hard to be Novak Djokovic playing doubles,
yeah.
And it looks hard to be
alongside
Novak Djokovic playing doubles. All of it looks an ordeal, really.
Whereas,
it's a fascinating ordeal.
Yeah. Whereas Sinner and Sonego were totally vibing, you know, and I think they are pretty good friends off court. They were talking about that in the Italian portion of their press conference the other day, how well they get on. But they've really clicked on the doubles court. And exactly as you said, I thought Sonego's sort of crossing at the net was really good. That doubles instinct was there, and Sinner was just teeing off with his shots. Whereas
he looked so free, didn't he?
Absolutely, that's a good word for it. Whereas Djokovic and Kecmanovic looked pretty burdened by the whole thing, and it was only a moment in the second set where the crowd started really getting involved, and they started booing, they started hissing, that we really saw a bit of fire from Djokovic. But even that, I thought, you know, Djokovic did that thing, his new thing of conducting the crowd.
I love it. It's my favourite thing.
I love it so much.
It is not Mimir Kecmanovic's favourite thing.
It cuts right to the heart of why Djokovic and doubles doesn't quite work, because that might be the best thing for Djokovic in that moment, but I'm not sure it's the best thing for poor Kecmanovic to have the whole stadium booing him.
Yeah, this might have won you 24 Grand Slams.
Yeah, well, I've got zero, mate.
It really was that. What a moment that was when he was inviting that on from the crowd. And we've discussed this a lot recently, how much we all like this version of Djokovic that leans into that and uses it as a force. But absolutely fascinating seeing that translated into it's a microcosm of the sport, isn't it, of creating a team version of an individual sport. This is the most selfish of sports, and that is one of the beautiful, unique things about the Davis Cup and the Billie Jean King Cup, that it's that you are transposing the selfish and the individual onto the team team dynamic, and this was that in microcosm.
And I know, you know, Djokovic has won the Davis Cup with Serbia back in 2010, and it was this amazing moment that, you know, really helped to propel him to the next level. But I get the feeling that when Novak Djokovic plays as part of this Serbian team, it becomes more stressful for him. It's a it's a responsibility that he carries. Whereas I think the true sort of best team players, even the great sort of individual players, like Sinner, for example, I think he's able to relax in that team environment. And there is a sense of a team and all being in it together and all having each other's backs. I'm not saying the Serbian team don't have each other's backs, but they're all looking at Djokovic.
Like, he's the captain, isn't it? It's quite funny seeing him sit down and sort of wondering what Viktor Troicki's saying to him. Mm. I don't think it's awkward because they're friends. Like, I don't think... I'm sure there are other people that could be in that position that Djokovic would really resent trying to give him advice or hype him off or something. They're friends, it's fine. But I don't think he's giving him tactical advice, is he? I mean, why would you bother? But he's also got to say something. He can't just sit there, sit on his hands, can he? So he's sort of like, look busy, Viktor.
Yeah, yeah. I just think at the end of a tiring year, having a team event should be this incredibly sort of liberating experience. You can finally just lean on other people. And that's what Jannik Sinner has kept saying in press, how pleased he is. This is a team event to end the season. Whereas it doesn't feel like that with Djokovic. It feels more stressful for Djokovic because he knows exactly what he's doing when he's at an event in singles. He knows how to completely sort of just make his way through all the different stages of a tournament when he's just there on his own, obviously with his team, of course. Suddenly throw in the team environment and everyone's looking up to him. He's got to make probably decisions for other people, and suddenly he's involved in a doubles match that he really doesn't like playing. You know, it's just a lot. And I think, you know, Djokovic has been the best player in the world generally over the last 15 years. Obviously, there's been times where Federer has been it and Nadal, but generally he's been the best player the last 15 years. And he has been pretty committed to the Davis Cup. He's played a lot of ties. And Serbia have won it once. And I feel like if he was really good at this, they'd have won it more. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Something is really hard for him, I think, in Davis Cup. And the added pressure of how much he wants it, I'm sure, as well. But it all just creates this pressure around him and this stress, which you do see on the tour, but he just manages it better. I think it's really fascinating, and obviously it took still an amazing performance from Jannik Sinner. It wasn't like Djokovic was a disaster today. He played well in the singles after the first set. I just find it all so interesting. This Davis Cup can go through big format changes, and yet it still has this extra element to it that you don't get anywhere else.
That is the sound of some furniture being moved, by the way, in the background. They seem to be creating a sort of... it looks like someone could be hosting a podcast live show down there. I don't know whether they've seen the microphones and thought...
There's something in this.
I hope that's not too distracting for you. I mean, Novak Djokovic decided this year, I want the Davis Cup again, didn't he? And to his great credit, he committed to it, mind, body and soul, didn't he? Next year is an Olympic year. It is I know he defies aging, but, you know, as I always say, he defies aging by making, part of that is by making incredibly smart scheduling decisions. It's hard to see him being able to commit to all of it next year, isn't it? Four slams, Olympics and Davis Cup. Okay, so then you may be looking at 2025. He's going to be 38 going on 39 in 2025. And I don't know whether all of this was in his mind when he made the decision to commit mind, body and soul to winning the Davis Cup this year. But I think there aren't many things that Novak Djokovic decides I'm going to do and doesn't do. And that must be quite hard from him. Look, I think he'll bounce back just fine because we've got plenty of evidence of Novak Djokovic being the most resilient man in sport, but I can imagine this hurting quite a lot right now. And I don't know, do you think, I mean, I know this is irrelevant, it's a facetious question, because it wasn't even a scenario that we discussed. Would they be more likely to win that tie if Novak Djokovic hadn't played doubles?
I genuinely had the same thought. I don't think so, because
there's not an
obvious alternative.
But maybe Kecmanovic would have played
better. Yeah, because Kecmanovic,
without someone conducting the jeering crowd,
Kecmanovic was a total shadow of the player he'd been all week in that doubles. And I spoke to Kecmanovic after his singles win today, and I said to him, were you expecting to be the number two singles player? Because I basically said, I wasn't expecting that. You know, I said people were expecting Laszlo Gera, you know. And he said, no, I was not expecting to play number two singles. He said, quote, I was here for doubles.
That's age well.
But then presumably during his sort of training, and they just got a feel that he was going to be the right guy to put in at number two singles. And he absolutely was brilliant in both singles matches he played. So maybe you're right. Maybe he would have played better with someone else. But I just think there's just no way you can do that if you serve, is there? I mean, if they'd lost and left Novak Djokovic off.
Yeah, it's one thing if you've got a great doubles team.
Yeah, for sure.
From your nation. It's another thing if you're playing singles players at doubles and you don't play the greatest of all time. I agree. I'd love to see that sliding doors to know, but it is a pretty pointless discussion to have. So I'm really, really glad I brought it up. It feels so long ago now and so irrelevant all of a sudden. And yet there was a time about 12 hours ago when David Law was saying that Musetti and Kecmanovic was the most enjoyable tennis match he had watched all year. And it was one of those where I just can't believe we're not going to lead the podcast with this match. I don't care what happens in Sinner against Djokovic. I don't care what happens in the doubles. This is what we're leading with. This is brilliant. This is amazing. This is the best. And yet it's been relegated to footnotes somehow.
Yeah. I mean, even the very fact of waking up this morning and I read all the Italian press and they were reporting Musetti is in. And then that was confirmed when the nominations came out. Even that felt like a really big moment in the day, because it just felt so pivotal that Italy win that number two singles, because, you know, Sinner's up against Djokovic. Ultimately, I think the Musetti doubters out there, and I don't mean that in a harsh way, were proven right today. But along the way, he did some spectacular things.
But none of the doubters don't think he's capable of the spectacular things.
Absolutely. But I wasn't expecting to see spectacular things today. I thought Kecmanovic was going to win this in straight sets. And especially with the way it started, I mean, Kecmanovic broke immediately and instantly looked the more comfortable player. But Musetti did do really well to win that first set. The game he played when Kecmanovic was serving for the set, 5-4, just the most dazzling tennis. Two incredible passing shots, one off the backhand, one off the forehand. Kept it up in the tiebreak as well. And finally, you know, pockets this first set. And you're thinking, well, we genuinely were thinking, wow, that is something different from Musetti there. You know, that was fangy, the way he won that set against a player playing well. But, you know, you've got to win two of them.
That is the problem for Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a
or in a best of five, he got to win three. It's always one more than he, you know, he was two sets up on Djokovic.
Yeah,
got to win
playing,
one more.
If he was playing fast fours, there was a set and a half there in this match where it reminded me of that phase of matches we had between Djokovic and team about 3 or 4 years ago on hard courts, where they just were belters. Mm. And somehow Dominic Thiem was standing 3 metres behind the baseline and pumping ground strokes, single-handed backhands, full throttle, and them landing deep and having enough juice on them to keep the great Novak Djokovic pinned back on his baseline. Yeah, it reminded me of that. And it reminded me how bloody brilliant Novak Djokovic, but Dominic Thiem was to be able to sustain that over the course of these long, grueling matches and sometimes even get the better of Novak Djokovic. But Lorenzo Musetti, I mean, Kecmanovic isn't Novak Djokovic, but Lorenzo Musetti isn't peak Dominic Thiem either. And I think it's such an illustration of the fine margins at the top of the sport. Most players, I mean, okay, Musetti has a very flashy game, doesn't, when he's pulling off the spectacular, it looks more dazzling and more eye-catching than a lot of players. Partly that's the single-handed backhand that always looks more flourishing generally than the double-hander. But most players can look spectacular for a bit. Most players can be brilliant for a bit. That's not winning tennis matches. I'm sure your mate Andy could look brilliant for a bit.
Confirmed. He wins a lot too.
but that's not it, is it? That's not the sport. That's not what anyone remembers you for, and that's really, really tough. I get it. You know, when I hit a great shot, I think, should I get more than a point for that? That can't just be a point. Do I have to do that again? Mm. Like, can we not just stop now and remember that forever? But I don't think he just doesn't have the sturdiness somehow, Lorenzo Musetti. And there was a quite alarming physical fade from him in that third set. And I don't know how much to judge him on that, because I imagine there was emotional energy expended in that match, the like of which he never has before. But equally, it was a very drastic physical fade. He was getting treatment on those legs. He couldn't push up on the serve in the third set. And David described it as he looked showroom fit. You know, I think there's far too much judging fitness on the basis of appearance generally, well, in the world, but also in sport. And I thought potentially that was a good point. He sort of ticks all the fitness boxes. You know, he's clearly spending a lot of time in the gym, but that's not actually the same, is it, as being able to go the distance at the highest level. And again, it's one sample size. It might have been two, if you include retiring for the fans.
Which he didn't do.
Well done, Lorenzo. You did not do that for today. And maybe it was the stress of representing his country and all of that. I'm sure that was a contributing factor. But it's one to remember with Musetti, and it could be a worry going forward, I think. It was certainly a really disappointing end to what, for a long time, had been a brilliant match. Really brilliant.
Stunning. Yes, yeah, so good. So good. And also, I'm desperate to see that level from Kecmanovic a bit more. You know, as you said the other day, we've seen it in patches. But him playing at this sort of level is he'd be a force. He really would. He's such a good player. And we just don't see it that often. And I hope we do going forward. But, you know, you sort of felt like if they'd won this Davis Cup, it could have been a real launch pad. But it's a pretty crushing blow to go out on in that doubles like that.
How sad was he afterwards?
Very sad.
Oh.
Yeah, well, it was a little tough to judge because no questions were directed at him in the press conference. Mm. You know, like I said before, it's Novak Djokovic. He even carries that responsibility. He speaks on behalf of the team. You know, no one else gets asked the question. So he just was sitting there in the press conference, sort of leaning back, looking down.
This is Ketsmanovic?
Yeah. And on the court, he, you know, Djokovic went over and very magnanimously went up and shook the hands of everyone in the Italian team.
Very classy moment, yeah.
Whereas, you know, Ketsmanovic was packing up his bag, wanted to get out of there.
Let's get away from this crowd that have been booing
me. Booing me, and my partner's been encouraging them.
What about the Italians in press, both generally and Lorenzo Musetti? Because I always think that's a weird one, isn't it? Your team are on a high.
Yeah, and midway through the tie, he comes into press.
Right, okay, so he didn't come in with the team at the end.
They bring in
the
first
singles.
So
you had a sad Musetti press conference and then some hours later a pumped Italian press conference.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, all weird. And, you know, Musetti got asked a big question about next season.
You know, oh, crikey.
Because it was kind of like, well, your season's done. Because obviously Italy are going to lose because Novak Djokovic is playing.
And even if they win.
Yeah, yeah. Musetti said he felt something start of the third set, and that was why there was the physical decline. He said he'd need an exam, was the word he used, to tell whether he's even in physical contention to play tomorrow. Seems very unlikely to me that, well, for two reasons. A, he just has such a poor record in Davis Cup. You've tried him once now, didn't work. But I just don't think physically he would be ready tomorrow. And then there was quite a funny moment in the team press conference for Italy with Sinner, Sonego and Filippo Volandri, the captain, where Sinner was talking about how tired he is. And he said, well, you know, he was asked to talk about his matchup with de Minaur tomorrow. And he said, well, let's see who plays. Captain makes a decision. I've got a lot of tennis in my legs. And then Volandri was looking at him as if to say, mate, you're definitely playing. And he was then asked.
Do you think that was him trying to be humble?
Yes.
Right.
I think so. I think that's exactly what
it was.
It's
quite sweet.
Yeah. Yannick Sinner is playing tomorrow.
Yeah. Imagine Musetti in at one.
The interesting thing...
Injured fangless Musetti in at one in the Davis Cup final.
The interesting thing is what they do with Sonego.
Right. Think. So you've got injured fangless Musetti.
Yeah, I think that's... that's a no.
You've got scar tissue Arnaldi, and there is a reason he didn't play today, mm-hmm. right? And then you've got Sonego, who's obviously... You know, high on the Davis Cup, he's been the man in doubles. But A, would that continue into singles? And would you be jeopardising his ability to be the man in doubles if you start playing him in singles? Mm.
And I think it's doubly fascinating because, you know, Sinner and Sonego have been really impressive in the doubles. But even Sinner and Sonego in the doubles... I don't think are favourites against Ebden and Purcell. A properly good doubles team. You know, you watched them the other night. They don't lose points on serve.
Yeah.
They're a very good team. They've won Wimbledon together.
Oh, so, it's fascinating.
You know, obviously Sinner's the favourite against de Minaur.
Yeah, 5-0 head-to-head.
Yeah.
I checked.
Although one of those is next gen.
Right.
So I'm very much... counting it as 4-0, but
okay,
sure. I think there's got to be some fatigue, like genuinely almost emotional fatigue as much as anything, beating Novak Djokovic twice in a day, and I've got to come back and do it again tomorrow. That's a tough
massive disadvantage for the Italians,
isn't it?
And it's a problem with the format.
Yeah, but I think
it's the same at the, yeah, but it's not the only tournament that suffers from that issue, but it is a problem.
But I think there is a real, and I know we said it today and it didn't end up being the case because of Sinner's heroics, but there is a real premium for Italy on winning that number two singles, because it will be very tough, I think, in the doubles. Maybe not tougher than trying to take down Novak Djokovic twice, but still very tough.
Who would you play? It's really tough having not played on Aldi today, right?
Yeah.
Because that surely would have damaged his confidence.
Yeah.
Just to now go, well, you weren't good enough for yesterday, but...
Yeah. I think they're going to go on Aldi.
Yeah.
Because
I back his tennis.
Yeah, me too. And it's not like Australia's number two is really set either. I think they'll go Popperin because of what he did in the semi-finals.
Surely.
But Popperin, honestly, Popperin was not convincing. He was so tight in that match. So I think it's absolutely fascinating, that number two singles tomorrow.
Yeah.
What do we? Silent night in the background.
They've turned the music back up, haven't they?
It just does.
Matt, in his best Spanish, asked them to turn down the Christmas carols for our recording. And I think we've used up our 1 hour window.
Yeah, they've brought the bill for the food as well while we've been recording.
They would really like us to leave. We will soon. We just have a few more things to discuss. It's quite loud, isn't it?
It's quite loud.
David's going to hate this bit of the pod. What do we think about the fact that Italy haven't... All of Italy's wins this tournament have involved Jannik Sinner. Do we think... I mean, obviously, stunning from Sinner. And maybe this is a conversation for tomorrow if... Sorry, just an extra voice has come into Silent Night. Maybe this is a conversation for tomorrow if and when the same thing transpires. You know, if Italy win courtesy of two Jannik Sinner victories. But what do we think about a team potentially winning the Davis Cup on the back of one man with a little sprinkling of Sonego on top?
Andy Murray?
Well, yeah. It happens, but yeah. Do we like it?
Yeah.
We
do
like it.
I do, actually. Because it's never a... there's always the doubles. So there is always a team element to it. You know, he does need that good partner that he gels with. You know, Murray needed his brother and Lubicic and Angcic. You know, there is always this team element to it. Fernandez, we saw in Billie Jean King Cup, she took over, but she needed, you know, Dabrowski in the doubles. I don't know. I don't mind it, I must say.
I love watching it in the moment. I love sort of the Herculean feat of one man or one woman carrying a whole country on their shoulders and rising to that challenge and hauling their inferior teammates over the line with them. I find that a really compelling watch. And yet philosophically, there is a part of my brain that goes, wait, this is a team competition.
Mm. I mean, looking at the whole year, Sinner wasn't there in the group stages.
True.
He didn't play post US Open. So it was Arnaldi and Mazzetti. You know, they got Italy to this phase, and it's like, okay, now Sinner's here, let's let him take over. So maybe that balances it out a little bit. You know, it has been a team effort through the year, but yeah, here, gosh, it's all about Sinner.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Okay, well, the music stopped. We've paid the bill. They definitely, definitely want us to leave. Any other business from today, Matt? One of my takes from the Sinner Djokovic match, which incidentally I watched in the sky.
This was amazing.
On the way to Malaga, it's first time. I mean, I always pay for in-flight Wi-Fi because David and I have very different attitudes to Wi-Fi in the sky. For David, it's oh my god, it's an opportunity to switch off for an hour. Whereas I get very anxious about not having access to communications even in the sky. So I always go for in-flight Wi-Fi, but I've never gone for the streaming Wi-Fi option because I've always thought, well, that won't work, will it? That'll be eight quid I'll never see again. Anyway, I thought the stakes are high here, so I'll risk my 8 quid this time. And lo and behold, there I am in the skies above Europe, watching Sinner Djokovic. It was unbelievable, and the bloke sat next to me gave him the ideas and he started streaming the West Ham Burnley game. West Ham fan. Anyway, one of my takes was that third set, just what an unreal display it was of the brilliance and beauty of the tennis scoring system. That Jannik Sinner, by some measures, had absolutely no right to win that set. He was back against the wall for the whole thing, as you said, hanging on. But it's not. I think it was Nick Lester in commentary. He said exactly what I was thinking at the time. It's not how many points you win. It's which points you win. And I just love that about the scoring system. It is a work of art, and sometimes you do just need to zoom out and go, wow, that they did us a solid there when they came up with that.
Yeah. And how often it is that Djokovic is the one who understands that sort of mantra of it's not how many points, it's which points. He's the guy who does that better than anyone, and he just had the tables turned on him in that respect today. You know, it was a classic Novak Djokovic set, that one. It was just that normally it's the other way around. And it's Djokovic who might steal a set or just win the points that matter. And it was Jannik Sinner today.
And he did it again in the doubles, didn't he?
That's right.
With Lorenzo Sonego, of course.
Yeah.
But
and then broke in the next game.
Yeah.
There was this real parallel between the two.
Maybe that will become his trademark, like the Naomi Osaka surge.
Yeah. It's a risky one to have, isn't it? Going love 40 down.
And the other thing, just the final thing, I'm sort of going back and remembering thoughts that I had throughout the day, but he didn't have a great serving day, generally. Like, he played brilliantly, but he was in an awful lot more rallies than he would have been hoping to be, I think. He wasn't getting as many cheap points today. It was in and out, but, you know, it wasn't like, oh, he goes love 40 down, and you think, oh, but two of these are going to be aces or unreturnables. I didn't, you know, I felt like he's going to have to earn these, and he did. I think it was serve volley on one of them.
He did serve very well when he was love 40 down on certainly at 15, 40 and 34.
He produced it when it mattered today
with his serve, absolutely. But generally, like, his percentage was low in that first set. He won it 6-2, but he was down in with his first serve percentage. But he did find his serve big time when it mattered, I suppose.
What's going to happen in the final?
I think Italy are going to do it.
But you think they'll have to do it in the singles?
I think so.
So you think no doubles?
Yeah, I think so. But then, you know, but then just telling myself I'm backing Arnaldi, therefore, to win the singles.
Apparently you are.
Mm. Yeah, I think I am. I think Arnaldi maybe played better than Popperin did the other day, even though Popperin won and Arnaldi lost. Arnaldi didn't get tight, like, he wasn't worried by the occasion. But I do take David's point from the other day, you know, if you play Popperin,
The
ceiling's high. You've got a match on your racket there, possibly, if he brings it, definitely. But I don't know. Italy.
David's not going to be pleased with the Popperin takes on this show, is he? If David
many beers
was here,
he's had. He's been fairly neutral about Popperin in his entire life. But give him three beers.
He had another beer after the show last night. He probably set up like a burner Instagram account to like posts about Alexei Popperin.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Australia might? Might nick it. I mean, I think the fatigue.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because
I think
in my head, I think Italy, Australia. I think Italy will win it. And then I go through the matches, and I think you're right about the doubles. And then it comes down to Arnaldi Popperin, and I don't know.
It's tight.
I might back Popperin in that. I think that's tough for him to come back from being benched today. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I always want the doubles. I want there to be doubles.
One sort of final thing from today was how awesome the atmosphere was. I mean, it was rammed in there, and there's a lot of vocal Italian fans, a lot of vocal Serbian fans, and just a good number, I think, of general tennis fans who just wanted to be there for a big occasion like that. I hope that we get the same tomorrow. I'm slightly worried that it will feel a bit diminished because
it's tough with Australia, isn't it?
You know, they've got a small section of fans there. There's a lot of Italian fans, so they'll make a noise. But generally, you know, when you haven't got Djokovic, I mean, it's the finals. I'm sure that will pull in plenty. I think it will be full. I think it will be good. But I don't know whether it will be quite as buzzy as it was today, because it was really proper.
Ketsmanovic should be watching today, going, why couldn't I have played in this?
Yeah.
Just tone it down a bit, guys. God, I can't believe we've only got one more day left of the tennis season, depending on whether or not you count the next-gen finals. Which are happening next week.
I don't.
No, I'm not sure anyone's going to be paying huge attention anyway. Okay, let's get to bed. Big day ahead in Malaga tomorrow. I'm here to host the draws for the 2024 Billie Jean King and Davis Cups. They're taking place tomorrow morning. Exciting times. TBC on whether Matt will be there.
I'll be there.
Will you?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Don't prioritise it over sleep.
It's 12:30, the first one. I'll be...
It's only 12 hours away.
I'll be up. Okay. I'll be there.
Okay.
Of course.
And we'll be back on the tennis podcast tomorrow. to round up the Davis Cup in all its glory. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia and Italy.
And you can end the year on a high.
I can't overtake David, though, so what's the friggin' point? Matt's got Darwin.
And the dearly departed Finland.
And David has got Maisie and the dearly departed Serbia. I thought he was onto a winner there. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers on three. One, two, three. Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we don't have shout outs. We shouldn't do them without David. But David will be back tomorrow. And so should shout outs be. So make sure you join us then. It's been an incredible day. We hope for more of the same tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.